on the Net. This is a podcast that's a product of the Flint Hills Veterans Coalition. And we're gathered around the table today in America's heartland just to tell some stories of military experiences and share a laugh. And really, this is just an oral history with a difference. And I think when you're done listening, you'll hear what the difference is. So pull up a chair. Join us for episode one, Shield to Storm.
It's all about GIs, right?
Yes, it's about GIs.
Okay. Gentle individuals.
That's it.
Wow. I don't know if I was ever one of those.
At the table is Chuck Sexton, Ray Borgia, and Tony Nichols. And thank you guys for agreeing to do this today. We appreciate
it. Thanks, Mel.
Can I ask you to go around, starting with Chuck, and introduce yourselves? Tell us where you're from originally, what branch of service and what unit you were in during Desert Shield. And Desert Storm, and what was your job at that time and your rank and anything else you'd like to add?
Okay, I'm Chuck Sexton. I'm originally from New York. In Desert Shield, I was a captain, and I was assigned to the 24th Infantry Division, 2nd Brigade. And what else did you want me to answer? Is there anything else?
What was your job?
What was my job? I was the S3 Air for the Brigade, and I was a Brigade S3 Plans Officer, and basically whatever I was told to do.
So what does an S3 Air do?
Well, it plans air routes. It plans air resupply. It plans air strike missions for attack helicopters and coordinates with the Air Force guys as far as bombing runs and close air support and basically anything that has to do with air.
Okay.
That's what I did.
Okay. All right. How about you, Jay?
I'm Jay Borja. I'm originally from the island of Guam. I was a draftee, went to Vietnam, and my last tour was Desert Storm, Desert Seal. I'm a 19 Delta, which is an armor reconnaissance specialist, and I was assigned to the 1st Infantry Division, 1st Squadron, 4th Cavalry at Fort Riley. My job there was I was the S3. I was the air liaison officer for the quarter cav, and I was attached to the Air Force while doing recons and flybys and taking enemy out with the A-10.
Oh, the Warthogs.
Yes.
Yeah.
I had the A-10 pilot with me when I was with the quarter cav.
Oh, wow. Oh, so, I want to hear more about that. That was my favorite plane.
Yeah.
In Desert Storm.
The pilot I was with hated being on the ground because for some reason he ended up being on the ground. And he was calling in the SPA reports for the ground war.
The what? What are those? SPA reports?
SPOT reports.
SPOT reports. What's that?
It's acronym where the pilots will spot enemies on the ground and they'll call it in.
Oh.
And then, they either use the helicopters or the A-10s to disengage or engage the enemy.
Okay. So, oh, very cool.
Yeah.
And Tony?
Yes, I'm Tony Nichols. Yes, the Tony Nichols. I'm from – I enlisted in Tampa, Florida. I was a 19 Delta also during Desert Storm. And I had graduated from college, and I enlisted in the Army. I wanted some adventure. And I hadn't even been in the Army a year, and we deployed to Desert Storm. And I was a Bradley driver during the action, M3 Cavalry Fighting Vehicle. I was with – 3rd of the 8th Cavalry, 2nd Brigade, 3rd Armored Division.
Yeah.
All right.
It was you were a member of the IBBD,
What's that?
International Brotherhood of Bradley Drivers. It was the union for Bradley drivers at the time.
In fact,
they're a very powerful union.
Yes, very powerful and very handsome.
And he likes long walks on the beach. You forgot about that one.
Pina coladas.
Playing with puppies.
And my name is Melody Sexton. I'm from St. Petersburg, Florida, just across the bay from Tony. He lived in the rich kids section of Tampa.
Yes, I did.
Yes, you did. And I had been married to an Army infantryman for 7 years, had 2 small children when Desert Storm started.
Desert Shield started.
And Desert Shield, that's true. That's true. I forgot what we were talking about today. That's our topic, right?
Mm-hmm.
All right. And I also want to acknowledge and thank our studio audience for being here today. And if you hear any loud noises in the background, it's their fault. So today we're going to talk about Desert Shield, and we're going to save Desert Storm for another day, another episode. This year, and it's hard to believe it, is the 30th anniversary of Desert
Storm.
Desert Storm. And so I think what we need to do, because it's been so – I know. Because it's been so long, we need to refresh in people's minds kind of what was going on back then. And so set the scene, describing the events that – kind of brought us into the Gulf in 1990. Chuck, you look like you want to say something.
Well, you got to think about it. It's the youngest Desert Storm veteran now is 49 years old, which is kind of wild because the youngest guy to serve was 19. And Tony was a very young,
24.
Very young and nubile 24-year-old.
Lean 24.
But so it's 49, which at the time, it seems kind of crazy when you look back at it now, but it's been 30 years. The reason it started, and I'll start this out with I first heard about Iraq doing something in Kuwait. I was at Fort Sill at the time, and I was going through the artillery advanced course after I'd done the infantry one.
Overachiever.
Yeah.
Whatever.
I failed.
I'd rather punch in the face than go to that
course. Well, I was going to the artillery advanced course. I remember watching it on the news, and the big thing on the news was watching the Russian HIP helicopters, the Iraqi Russian HIP helicopters flying into Kuwait City. And it's like, okay, this isn't going to last. This isn't going to last. And we were in our last 2 weeks of the course. So it's not going to last. It's going to be over by the time. And we'll be done with it. But basically it started, Mel, with the Iraqi invasion of Kuwait for several, you know, it depends on whose side you pick, but several reasons. And our agreement with Kuwait, as well as agreement with the international community to secure the flow of oil from the Persian Gulf. And at the time, Kuwait was the second largest supplier of Europe's oil and Japan's oil, the first being Saudi Arabia, the second being Kuwait. So that's what it was started for. And an agreement, you know, It wasn't Lebowski who said it, this aggression shall not stand. That was actually President George Bush who said the aggression will not stand. And that's when he sent the guys.
H.W.
Bush. Abu Bush.
Abu Bush.
Abu Bush. He was the one that said the aggression would not stand. And in August, he sent the 82nd Airborne and elements of the 24th Infantry Division, as well as a Marine Corps MEU that was already afloat in the Med.
Marine Corps what?
Marine Expeditionary Unit that was on board ships that was in the Mediterranean at the time.
It was the 5th Expedition Marine Corps.
For those who don't know, it's a brigade-sized unit that has it's self-contained helicopter, artillery, engineer,
oh, I didn't know that.
Reconnaissance, infantry, and armor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the biggest thing they were upset about at the time was I think they had just made the rule for the Marines that they had to sew name tags on their uniforms. So that was I remember talking to my Marine buddies. Oh, they were very upset about that because prior to that, Marines never wore name tags. Yeah. So
my nephew was in that. And he beat me over there.
Your nephew was on that ship?
Yeah.
Ah.
Yeah, 5 MEU, right? Yeah. So, but that's when it all kind of started for U.S. involvement. So it started at the first week of August is when he invaded. Middle of August is when U.S. troops started to arrive in Saudi Arabia in order to secure oil fields as well as the nation of Saudi Arabia, because there was a big fear at the time that he would continue moving. Saddam would continue to attack south towards Saudi Arabia.
Now, from a German point of view, I was in Germany. Well, technically, I graduated from basic training in August.
No.
August 15th of 1990.
Wow. Yeah. 1 week before.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
And so we came out of basic training, and I was so tired. I was glad to be out. And my parents drove me home back to Atlanta from Fort Knox. And there are people hanging American. They, hey, and I'm thinking, hey, great. You're welcome. Thank you for your service. No. They thought we were part of the 82nd that was going down to the port to deploy.
Oh.
So I got sent to Germany. And in Germany, we were all getting ready to deactivate anyway because things had started to wind down because the wall had fallen in 1989. Yes.
Yeah.
And when I got there, it was so like relaxed that they put me in the post office for 3 months.
To do
I
what?
Literally was in the post office. I was like, what have I done? I'm thinking – I mean, I watched the Laserdisc in the recruiter's office. This is not what I was going to be doing.
You had a college education.
Yeah, I had a college education, which is why I was,
it was in the post office.
It's not what they told you it would be.
A recruiter lied to you, Tony.
No.
Can you believe it, Tom?
Because we were saying this for 6 months in the desert. Our commander, our battalion commander, Timothy Lupfert, had a battalion formation in like middle of – beginning of December. And he says, my friends in the Pentagon have assured me we are not going to Desert Storm. Next morning, cover of Stars and Stripes, Third Army Division, going to Desert Storm. So we're sitting in the middle of nowhere. My friends in the Pentagon.
Faith in your leadership, huh?
So they took me out of the post office at the last minute. Threw me in the scout platoon. I'm like, who's this guy? Because I yelled at the first sergeant. I said, I didn't join the Army to work in the post office. And he had punched some private in the mouth at the Christmas party. So I was a little afraid of him.
Rightfully so.
I was like, I want to go into the scout
platoon. But you were really sick of the post office.
Yeah,
so you manned up. And
well, I mean, think about it. I knew what was coming down the pipe.
See,
the brigade was going to deploy.
Yeah.
And I stay home and work in the post office. The humiliation is unbearable.
Well – later on, I'll tell you a story about the post office and what
I'll
happens
tell you a story
to some of those
about
guys.
A guy who stayed back from my platoon. I'm not making this up. When we redeployed, two guys from the platoon went. He was on staff duty. The guy that didn't deploy, and he'd gotten promoted while we were gone. And none of us got promoted, so they grabbed him and beat him up. I mean, like he had to go to the hospital.
Well.
We hadn't been back to any
party. Yeah. Of those days.
Since we're talking post office, we had already been – you said December is when you got the alert. We had already been there. I left artillery school in the end of August, and then we went to 24th and went over to Saudi Arabia. Well, in about October, November – This is a story you won't hear. This was a near mutiny in the United States Army. This is a mutiny. They set our postal clerks at Dahran back in the city. We were out in the middle of nowhere by a little town that has a spot called Al-Uwaina. Our postal clerks set fire to the postal tent because they were smoking. And they destroyed the entirety of the 24th Division Christmas – Christmas
gifts.
And Thanksgiving mail. Fruitcakes were gone. Ham, illegally smuggled ham was gone. The Listerine bottles filled with alcohol, gone. Everything, it went up like a torch. Well, news finally got back, and that's when the sergeant major started arming the senior non-commissioned officers, started giving them ammunition so that they could put down the riot. It was a near mutiny. There was a demand to kill the postal clerks in Dahran. No.
Yeah.
The guys were cranking their Brads and their M1s, and we're going to drive back and kill the postal clerks. And it was a scab that was picked for about a month and a half because, as you know, the mail must go through. So what they continued to send were portions of letters that were like burned in half. So you can see like a burnt in half letter. And I remember – John Finnefrock.
Yes.
Guess his name.
No. Disco. That's the illegal nickname.
That's when I was been chided. I can't use. But finger and then fill in the blank. For
I was about to say, that judge. Guy was born.
Oh, it was terrible. He had a chip on his shoulder. But anyway.
And something else.
He got a letter that was burned completely in half. To where he didn't even know who sent it.
He only knew half the story.
He knew
what was going on.
Yeah, he only knew. Mike Billingsley got just the return address and his name Mike Billingsley on it. Another buddy of mine, which like I said, the scab was being picked every day because somebody would get one of these shreds of a burnt half burnt packet.
Life.
Yeah, half burnt. Must have smelled really good though down in Dahran. All the
honestly,
ham burning and chocolate.
It was World War II in the Desert Storm. I mean, you know.
Oh yeah,
we have a crate full of letters that we brought from the United States. Here, read that. You know, remember you oh, yeah. 10 days without a letter? Oh, yeah. He loves me.
Well,
I'm out here alone. Oh. Everybody hates me.
Yeah, that's real pitiful.
Oh,
yeah.
And then like a whole stack.
Yeah. And here, okay, here
comes. Like a jerk.
Vietnam guys, tell us about it. Tell us about how hard we had it.
Actually, August, my family and I were over in England. We were on leave. And I had my sister-in-law with me. She always wanted to see England. My wife's British, so we went to England with my sister-in-law. And, you know, we're watching BBC News. And, of course, you know, the invasion mm-hmm. of Kuwait. And my sister-in-law got so panicky because she knew her son was going to be, you know, involved yeah. with that because of the Marine Corps. I said, nah, he's not going to be there. it's going to take him a while to get there, you know. I mean, he's still back in the States. Oh, no, he beat me there. And I was wow. so
my pissed. Friends in Pentagon, yeah. sure, man. He will not be going to Desert Storm.
He was – actually, he had already gotten there about a month after the invasion. And I never got there till after December, I think.
You guys got there in December?
Yeah.
We got well, there on – we left on Christmas Day. Yeah.
My unit left in September, October. They went. Mm-hmm. They had the advance party already left. And they're waiting for the rest of the unit to get there. And I got there in December. I said, wow, okay. I mean, we traps from – the airport to the shipyard to some hotel, and we were just being bounced all over the place. Mm-hmm. And finally, this
Khobar Towers, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I stayed there briefly.
I was in there for like about a day and a half, and they said, you're headed out to the Alpha Alpha. You got to go pick up your crew. I said, hey, that's fine. I need to get out of here anyway. It was rain. I mean, mm-hmm. rain.
Oh, yeah, it rained real bad.
It was cold.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I said, this is reminding me of somewhere I always been. And sure enough, man, it was like get put on the bus and traveling, rain. You don't know if you're going to get, you know, you're going to sink in the sand because there was no road.
Well, it doesn't rain in the desert, though. So, and it doesn't get cold there either.
That's what they say.
Yeah, remember that?
Oh, most of the pictures I have, I'm wearing my parka.
Well,
with a hood.
The guys back in the state, you know, we kept getting care packages from the folks back in the States.
Sunscreen.
God bless them with sunscreen and keep cool towels and all this kind of keep cool stuff. And man, I remember we had Sergeant Tebow was one of the NCOs that worked for me. He had a scarf. He was one of the guys because we went over in August, September, and things were really, really hot then. It was 100 plus, and nobody brought any cold weather gear. You know, we come from Fort Stewart, and nobody brought any cold. So guys had like – we got issued long johns, so they would walk around with long johns without their trousers on. And he had a scarf.
That's
he had a GI scarf, one of the green GI scarfs, that, you know, with the – it's like a tube. And he, for his Christmas gifts that he gave everybody, it was so David Copperfield. He had cut the scarf into portions and then sewed hand kits with it, so it made hats with us. And it was horrible to look at, but we had our
what
cold.
Is it, World War II?
Oh,
we should have been on the internet.
Well, yeah, well,
yeah, right.
That's when RS2 shot a hole through the roof with his pistol because he got so nervous. But that's something else. That's when Tebow took his ammo away. He got ordered by our brigade commander, no more ammo for him. So he
just
took
one bullet in his pocket.
Barney Fife.
This is for self-inflict.
Well, packed on Christmas Eve, and we put our M60 machine guns in the camo nets and put them in the back of the track. And it was snowing. Mm-hmm. We had winter gear. We had plenty of winter gear. But when we got the machine guns, we unloaded them at the port. They were all rusted because they were wet.
Oh, no.
Them. Yeah. So,
well, we're talking about care packages in the mail and why that would people probably
cause people to mutiny.
Yes, they don't understand that. So let's talk a little bit about the living conditions. Once you got there, tell me where you were and what was it like, Tony, where you wound up. Where'd you wind up?
Keeping in mind that I was a private and driving a track, is that we got to the port. First thing we had to do was paint them tan color. So we painted them tan color. We were on the port for about 5 days. Yeah. And then we got orders pack up and go to this grid, establish an observation post on Tapline Road to provide security for other units coming in. So – and I wrote about it. The first night, I mean, I'm soaked. I'm just soaked, and you know, because it's raining and we're having to do all the stuff and unload and unload, and I'm just soaked. And I'm driving the track to this location, and I finally get there. It's night. I got the nod thing going on, and it's the worst. And we finally stop. They set up, and I just get on the track, and I strip naked, and it's howling wind, and I'm like, ah! And I put on dry clothes and get back in the driver's hole and fall asleep.
So you had a driver's hole. That's pretty good.
Yeah, it was like that's nice. A very small one-bedroom apartment.
What's a driver's hole?
Well, in a Bradley fighting vehicle, you are – the turret crew is in the turret.
Uh-huh.
And you're in the front of the vehicle in the hull. And it's pretty spacious.
Right next to the engine where it's warm.
So it's just you in there.
Me in there, yeah.
That's it.
And the engine's right here. So when I stop, it's kind of warm.
Yeah.
So I don't like to leave it. And there's a drain plug on the floor right by my foot. And I would hold it open with my foot. And
you went number one?
Went number one. You peed out. Yeah, so, I mean, literally, I'd be in there for days if I didn't have to do gardening.
Wait a minute. Are you a tanker?
No.
Yes.
That explains it.
Never leave the track.
This is career progression.
That explains it.
Yeah.
That explains it. How about you, Jay? Where did you wind up? What was it like?
Like I said, I was bounced all over Kuwait until I finally got to my unit, and they were out on the field already. They were in the Alpha Alpha.
What's the Alpha Alpha? What's that?
It's an assembly area, what they call an assembly area.
Oh, okay.
This is where a unit just pick an area out on a map.
Yeah.
Says, okay, this is where we're going to assemble. Everybody goes to this area, and that's where everybody is.
So where – you were in Saudi Arabia?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So where in – what – were there any towns near you or anything? Or?
No.
No.
When you look at something, nothing there to see.
There's no, don't turn left at the tree. Yeah, there's no tree.
North of Tapline Road.
And don't go chasing wild camels while you're at it. Anyway, we would just bounce all over the place. There were several of us that was the last people that came out of the unit, Fort Riley. And we got there. And I said, is there a telephone anywhere? And so, I was attached to the Air Force.
Oh, they had.
Oh, yeah. They had their own phone. My wife kept saying, where are you calling me from? I said, don't ask where I'm at because I don't know, but I'm calling you.
Somewhere in Saudi Arabia.
Send me some coffee. That's all I wanted because we never had any coffee, you know. Mesol was too far away. You never had hot coffee, so coffee was a commodity that you – I mean, that's black market, right? And so they were sending me coffee. We had friends, and they were putting coffee together and packets and sending it over there. I beat every one of them back.
No.
I beat every one of them back that they sent.
Yeah.
Well.
I was still receiving care packages when I retired in 91.
No. Yeah.
Your phone conversations are heartbreaking. Because I – 2.5 hour drive to the closest phone.
How far was your drive?
It was about an hour and a half, 2 hours.
Yeah, it was 2.5 hours.
The back of a 5-ton.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Covered completely in moon dust at the end of
the truck. It was $10 an hour from AT&T.
Yeah. It was nothing free at the time. Drive all the way. We had the phone center. When we got there in August, they set up a phone center. They made an agreement with the nation of the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia to allow us to tap into their phone lines. So we're all They built the phone center, which they quickly surrounded. It was a divisional level thing. They quickly surrounded it with concertina wire, and there were phones on 4x4s on a little piece of plywood. You had regular dial-up phones, and they were spaced out in a in a GP medium, general purpose medium size tent.
Yeah, like that.
Yeah.
About this.
And you had an MP with an M60 position standing there at the front of them, and you were in line, and you'd line up there, and they had the MP had a stopwatch.
Yeah.
And you had exactly 10 minutes on the phone, and there was a 2-minute transition time. So the guys that were on the phone before you got out and you went in,
yeah,
and you picked up your phone and you hope you got a good one, and the MP would say, "Go!" And that's when you'd start dialing. And I still remember what you'd always get, "Afwan Sadiq," which was the first thing, yeah, which meant your phone call didn't go through because, yeah, it was, "Sorry, sir." your phone got, so you dial like crazy. And sometimes, you know, I can't understand why my wife would get so mad at me. Sometimes I'd get through and have about a minute of talking, and she was out doing all the important things that people have to do back in the rear, and I would just get like crazy angry when I'd call, and it would take her that minute to get to the phone, and beep, and the MP would get time up. The M60 would pull back the cocking handle, and everybody'd have to move out.
See, they gotta go 2 hours to go make a phone call. I just step out of my
tent. Yeah, I know. Air Force.
Well, I'm glad you were with the Air Force because we all know they got it. They got it going.
That was the best assignment I had in my military career. I swear to God, I'll do it again.
I did that drive a few times, and I decided that I was just going
to. Well, I did it every time. Every time.
Location and just not talk to anybody.
Well, I lived. Did you guys have tents?
Airport.
Did. Yeah, we had squat tents, those little squat tents.
Oh, that's really nice.
Like, it would hold 4 people comfortably. We had 5 people in there.
I had a squad camouflage net, which we had until December. We got Christmas gifts of a GP small.
Well, we brought our BII. Maybe you've heard of it.
No, we didn't have any of that.
BII again?
That?
Oh,
yeah,
basic initial issue for issue a track.
Okay.
Like each track,
gotcha.
Bradley.
So it had the tent.
Each section comes with the tent.
We had our nothing. We had our camouflage net.
We brought our own from Fort Riley.
Well, yeah, you get
We had it was desert green and brown.
I had a cot. I had a cot, and I broke 2 pieces of wood off a pallet that I used to stand on when I changed my boots. That was pretty cool.
When I showed up, I was like, the last guy to show up, and they gave me a cot, and it was a broken cot. So my cot for 6 months.
You have sway back now because of it.
Was held up
VA.
With a Maddox handle that I cargo strapped to it and something else. Just like I had to hold it up.
Did you claim that on your VA when you got out as a bad back? You should have.
I'll be honest with you. I didn't want to claim it because I felt it made me a better
person. it's a little suffering, little monk.
Yeah. I'm bragging about it.
Yeah, there I was.
Well, you think your war was hard?
Well, the people back home kind of found out about the coffee, and toilet paper was the big thing, and baby wipes was a huge thing. And so that started going overseas. Often it missed the soldier. You got it after you were retired.
I mean, I did get some of the care packages that they sent. First 4 or 5.
Yeah, yeah.
And then after that, it was the week that they come in. And right February, right after the war finished, my commander said, "Pack your shit, you're going home."
Yep.
I said, "What?"
It's a good deal.
Well, it's because I had already submitted my retirement.
You already dropped them, yeah.
Yeah, my retirement had already gone through. It had been approved.
But they sent you to.
But they.
Your retirement paperwork is approved. Congratulations.
Yeah,
get on the plane.
You're going
Vietnam vet? Oh, okay.
Get on the plane.
Well, anyway, it was approved, but then it said, stop loss.
Right.
I said, "Hey, I got nothing else better to do." So.
An extra $150 a month? Wow, what a deal. I'm in.
I only receive 2 or 3 months of combat pay.
Well, you guys are tax-free, too.
No.
Yeah, they were tax-free.
Who?
The enlisted guys were tax-free. 100%. Yeah, because it was the same rules that they had in Vietnam.
Yeah.
Did not know.
Yeah, that. Officers, no, you weren't tax free.
I didn't do it for the money, Chuck. I did it for the glory.
Well,
I did that too, but
and the free haircut.
You got free haircut?
Oh, yeah. Barber's kit.
Company barber's kit.
Company barber's kit.
Shear them.
I already had to pay for mine.
Not that kind of haircut, Tom. Oh.
Okay. Anyway, so I wanted to ask you guys. I seem to remember that in Desert Storm. We were coming up against the third – wasn't it the third largest
The fourth largest army in the world.
Fourth largest army in the world. They were just finishing, I guess, a very long war with Iran, and they were equipped by the Russians, which is who I think, if I remember right, that's who everybody was training to fight at that time. And so there was a real perception, at least stateside, there was a lot of talk from former Army officers and about how ill-equipped the Americans were to go up against the Russian equipment. That from their boots have a metal plate in them, and they're not going to be able to walk in the sand, to the Bradleys and tanks are going to get congested with the sand from the desert. It was just not expected to go very well. So what did you guys think? You know, how did you train for this, or how, you know, what brought it all together? And what did you think about going up against the Russian stuff?
Our equipment is war proven. Okay, our M1s, our Bradleys, our attack helicopters—they are all combat proven during Desert Storm and Desert Shield. I was in a 113. Which is a armored personnel carrier.
Okay.
Okay. That is an ancient vehicle.
Aluminum box.
Yes.
The French word for it is sheet box.
Yeah. Anywho.
If you could design a target.
Yeah. Make it square. It's slow.
It proved itself in Vietnam, and it proved itself in Desert Storm.
Yeah.
Going through the jungle. Proved itself, going through the sand, proved itself, and it's war hardy. It's just like the Warthog.
Yeah.
It is well proven. And I would take a Warthog anytime, and I would take a 113 anytime.
Yeah. They're putting a modernization packet on it.
Yeah.
I don't know. I like Bad Brad, but I'm.
I mean, I was Bradley trained, but when I got there, my 113 was there. What am I doing?
Do you guys remember? You guys remember that book that Hackworth came out with
about face?
Yeah, that was right before, and that was the big buzz that was going throughout the entire army. It was Hackworth.
I just read that.
And about face, because his experience is, you know, he won a Silver Star in Vietnam and a bunch of other highly decorated from Korean War, and he was making the rounds. And my wife told me this. I didn't know it because I was out the. All I heard was the voice of peace, which we'll talk about in a little bit. But
we do not like the bush.
but Hackworth wrote this book that said, and he was doing the rounds, and he was the respected military expert, and he did CBS Morning Show and Today's Show and CNN, and he said that basically the American Army and American military will just run up against this hardcore army, and they're not going to be able to stand it. And we're going to be beaten by the Iraqis, and it's going to be another quagmire similar to Vietnam, and it's going to grind down. And that's – Mel, you heard it better than me, so the stuff that Hackworth was saying.
Yeah, he was the one that was talking about how the boots, even our boots for our soldiers were –
because of the spike plates.
Ill-equipped to be in the desert, and that he was the one I remember saying. And, of course, I just read his book, and He was just on all the networks saying gloom and doom. As a matter of fact, I remember distinctly in one of the newspapers reading that the government had ordered, I think it was 165,000 body bags for this war.
Sorry to disappoint.
Yeah, my name didn't show up on that one.
Sorry.
Yeah, so it was pretty scary on the home front.
Well, even I was in a scout platoon. There was nobody in front of us except one or two helicopters.
Right.
And they had given us an assessment of what they thought was – and we're like, why would you tell me that, that I'm going to get
– Oh, the T-72 will destroy every M1 on the battlefield. It's autoloader. Do you remember hearing all that nonsense?
Yeah.
The M1 will not – because we had been fed on the same malarkey that NTC had been pitching for all those years, and where they supposedly replicated a T-72 and any M1 that came against it was immediately destroyed. Well, reality will teach different. In the coming episodes.
We were the guys in Germany. We were all there trained to fight the Russians. So we were – these guys were highly, highly trained. Mm-hmm. I mean, very professional. And that army they put in the field in Desert Storm was trained.
Oh, yeah.
And the fact that they could sit in that ridiculous, terrible desert for 6 months after fight the war, win, and then sit there and wait. I mean, that is a disciplined army.
Well,
the thing with them, though, is that they were battle hardened, only they were tired.
Mm.
Okay, and you're facing a Fres right off the boat combat unit, and you're not going to win if you're already battle hardened and then you're facing a Fres.
You guys are selling yourself short. You know, you know, honestly, when you look at it, our leaders, every single one of our general officers was in Vietnam. Every single one of our brigade commanders was in Vietnam. And I'm not talking one tour. I'm talking my brigade commander was a guy named Paul Kern, who was on the initial – he was a troop commander on the invasion of Cambodia. He was in the 11th ACR at the time, and he had done tours before that. The battalion commanders – Vietnam vet. Every non-commissioned officer above the rank of Sergeant First Class was a Vietnam veteran. So, and they knew the deal. They knew the deal. They knew the deal. So
there was four of us in my squadron that was all from the 101st, except for the squadron commander. The squadron commander came from somewhere else, but he had been in Nam. Mm. And he knew the tactics over in Vietnam, and then
it's the mindset more than the tactics. They weren't going to lose, and they weren't going to have the same thing happen again. And we were just going to kick shit out of them and get it over quick. Yeah. And that, I remember as a fly on the wall here in General McCaffrey, who was our division commander, a big time warrior, talking with our brigade commander Paul Kern, a big time warrior. And a guy named Terry Scott, another Vietnam vet, big-time warrior, and the sergeant majors all getting together, and them specifically saying, what happened to us is not going to happen to these guys. And I remember that. So they had it down to where nobody was going to let them lose.
Yeah.
Nobody was going to stand in their way. And so don't ever, the Vietnam vets won that war. We may have been the guys on the field, but they're the ones that won the war for us.
Well, from my perspective, they let that leash go.
Oh, yeah. And they trained us, too.
That was because there was no civilians. It was them and us. And I had a front row seat to that.
Yeah.
It was crazy. They just – and, fast forward 15 years, I'm an advisor for a former Republican Guard tank battalion.
Wow.
So I got their perspective on a lot of things.
Well –
they think they won the war.
Well, I remember talking to – I talked to, funny enough, almost, 15 years later, I talked to one of the guys that I actually captured who was in – and he kind of remembered. But he was in the Alpha, the parachute regiment. And we captured him, and I still got his jump wings that I ripped off his uniform. And I got his squad book or his platoon book. But the guys who trained that army were the Vietnam guys. And they were the ones that trained that force that probably – and I know this sounds, like an old guy sitting back and drinking a beer. But the reality is that is a force that probably was the finest it has been fielded since 1945.
I agree with that. And I think we got,
We were not sensitive. I can tell you that.
It was very different.
I was not sensitive
very
after my
different army.
experiences in
combat arms is nothing but guys.
That's right. We were infantry.
I mean, I remember the first time I saw a woman in like 3 months. Well, and I was like, what is she doing here?
There's one. Everybody would always want to listen to the radio when the S2 from one of the units from 1st Brigade, because they could hear a woman's voice. Yeah. And that was just something very comforting, other than getting a cassette tape, which my wife sent me, which were listened to over and over and over again. At night, I'd listen to cassette tapes. But just hearing that somebody else that sounded different, that wasn't using – a swear word every other word, was something really kind of nice to
– not a GI talk.
Yeah, well, you know, you do what you can.
Well, and speaking of a woman's voice, how about Baghdad Betty? Did you guys hear
her? I never got her.
That? Never heard her.
You guys missed out. She
I
was
– I know.
Hannah. Hanoi. Hannah, yeah.
Was it Hannah?
Hannah. Hanoi Hannah?
Something like that.
Yeah.
Did you hear her?
I heard her.
Oh, did you?
Yeah. I was on guard duty while – Bob Hope was in country.
Bob Hope.
Did you get to see him?
No. Oh, no. I just said I was on guard duty. I was in the tower.
How angry were you about that?
Huh?
How angry were you?
I was getting ready to shoot. Whatever came to that fence, I was going to shoot. Oh, yeah. You make me miss Bob Hope.
That stinks.
Oh, no. Well, hey.
Come across that
when they we would get to go back. They had a rotation that could go back to this place called Half Moon Bay, and it was an all male Saudi Arabian swimming club on the beach.
That sounds like a
and guys, oh, it was terrible. Yeah. But I never went back because I traded every one of my slots. I said, okay, all I want is to go to the Bob Hope show because I know Bob's going to come to Saudi Arabia. He's going to show. I know Bob's going to be here. I want to go to a show like our parents went. No, he went. Bob went.
I've never seen
the week
him.
Before. And
well, I retired
and
before then.
General Kern, he said, no, it's before the war started, Top.
Desert Shield.
General Kern's, my brigade commander said, okay, Chuck, I got it. You're going to go see Bob Hope. That's all you want. Because, you know, the guys from the Second War, the guys from Korea, the guys from
Vietnam
got to see Bob Hope. And that's what I wanted
Except
to do.
Except for Jay.
And the week before Bob Hope came, all R&Rs in country were canceled by General McCaffrey. Yeah. He canceled them all because any vehicle was either running medical supplies, ammunition, or mail. So everything else was dedicated. Man, General McCaffrey, he wouldn't even let us say so our name tags on our uniforms. We didn't have name tags because everything was bundle washed. So that's what they said. It was bundle wash. This is the Vietnam stuff, you know, where they kick out a bundle well, he canceled it all. And I felt that was almost a near mutiny right there. I was so – Melody?
I got a letter.
Like, oh, yeah.
I'll be honest. I don't know what kind of waffle-eating unit you were in, but we didn't have any USO-eating shows or none of that.
It was not
– combat. We were just eating dirt and MREs.
Oh, yeah. There are – yeah, okay.
It was just pain and combat.
Oh, yeah.
We had MREs.
Yes.
Oh, come on.
I didn't have a shower for 2 months.
Oh, you poor sweetheart. Oh, you sweetheart.
You had MREs, though.
Oh, hold on. Let me give you a tissue.
I bet those MRE had turkey meat in it.
Well, speaking of chow, 90 days chicken cacciatore every hot meal every day. Because
I love chicken cacciatore.
Not after day 40. You know,
not after day 3.
our cook was so lazy that he went – the pallets that were laid out, you know, they have pallets and there's breakfast pallets, there's lunch pallets, and they're broken based on you go to each one of the meals and you can pick No. Lazy goes to the one pallet that was all chicken cacciatore because it was all chicken cacciatore and you had chicken breast and you had roast beef, which was you got roast beef, man, you were good. You must have been in a calf unit. But
hey, wait a minute. I resemble that.
Speaking of MREs.
We had chicken cacciatore, those tea rations every day. And the one time that he tried to make amends is when he almost destroyed he took out more American soldiers than Saddam. He went downtown. He went downtown on the civilian market in the Ville and he bought tomatoes and he cut up the tomatoes and put them on a salad from the lettuce that he got from downtown and he fed us this salad and everybody got Achnod's revenge. And it wiped out a brigade of the 24th Division. Had Saddam come across, I would just rolled over.
I'm out.
Never have I contemplated suicide like that. That was, and it was a great latrine to go to too. By the way,
yeah,
yeah, the burnout latrine. It was a lovely thing.
We did that in
Vietnam.
Yeah, I love it.
You did.
Yeah. Pour diesel in it.
Oh, it's terrible.
And burn it. Oh, there you go.
When we that was the Olympics year too. '90 was the Olympics year, so. We had the start of the Olympics, the company Olympics, and they took a barrel of shit up to the top of the one hill that was around us, and everybody
burned it.
Everybody was in their long johns in formation, and we were all dun 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 dun, dun, and a kid ran up the hill with a torch and set fire to it. It was a lot of good entertainment back then, which I hope never to repeat.
That's why you were introduced when you first did in country.
Oh, yeah. Shit burner.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. That was you go into the, like, this area full of tents and they're full of soldiers. And, you know, they're all waiting to be assigned to a unit. And you were there for a week. You were burning.
Oh, yeah. It's pleasant. Time, it's really pleasant, day. Isn't it?
Oh, God. That'll wake you up early in the morning.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
It will wake you up.
Cami net pull, tape to stir it. That was always a pleasant thing to stir.
Yeah. Well, if you really want to know, because you didn't ever burn shit, because you were an officer. I was a private. I burned lots of shit.
Did you enjoy it?
It's 20% MoGas, 80% diesel.
Diesel, yeah. If you get the mixture right. But if you get the mixture wrong, will explode. Yeah.
And guess what? Don't be standing there and that thing explodes.
You use all just MoGas.
Oh, no.
Yes, you do, because instead of a 3-hour detail, it turns into a 1-hour detail.
Or use incendiary grenade.
I remember it exploding on guys because they did use too hot of a gas mix.
Yeah.
It's an art. And I apparently,
you're well suited.
Yeah. I was really good at it.
It was a chemist.
Yeah. Fashion design.
Oh my
gosh. You know, we all have gifts that the Lord gives us.
Yes.
And
shit burning is not one.
I'm a 360-degree soldier.
What does that mean?
I'm either dealing death or burning shit. I just never stop. Just constantly.
It's one or the other.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. All right, last question. Last question. You guys spent a lot of time in the desert waiting for this all to kick off. And so when the air war started, what did you think? Were you like, oh, finally, this is it. We're going to move. Or, you know, what in the world did you think when that happened?
Well, again, I was private and I was – me and my buddy Siptak, you know, we always did everything together. We're sitting there on the ramp, and it was like – it was dark. It's so dark. You can't even see your hand in front of your face.
Everything?
Yeah, you can't see anything. So then it comes over the radio. Okay, the air war started, and we just grabbed the ammo cans and started shoving bullets into the magazine because they wouldn't let us load until the war started. So then we got all our combat loads out. Everybody started throwing tow missiles into the launchers. Okay.
You were ready within an hour, right, to go.
You know, just picture the guy from Mad Max with the mohawk and the shoulder pad. Now?
The humongous.
No, we had General Schwarzkopf call our S3 and says, be prepared because the first launch is getting ready to go.
And just reminding everybody, you were attached to the Air Force at that time.
And we were right there, the artillery and the rocket launchers. And, well,
you had a front row seat. Mm-hmm.
That's all you hear. You were trying to take a nap because you just had a long road march to get there. And the first thing you heard was that rocket coming out of that pot. And then the 155, and I said, oh, my goodness, it's now or never. Here we go. And then about 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock that morning, we started breaching the berm.
Well, that wasn't until February.
That was until, we
started breaching that berm.
And Air Force nailed them for a bunch of I remember it happened, and then nobody told us that it was going to happen. But you knew something was going on because all of a sudden MLRS started kicking in, and they were shooting the early the multiple launch rocket system was shooting at all the enemy radar sites that were they had right along the border. So we started. I remember the MLRS kicking in. It's like, oh, this is there's something's happening, and they hit all the rockets. And then the next thing I remember seeing was all these zoomies coming over us, just hauling. And the one way you could tell they were on our side was they had the lights on, and you could see as they were going in the once they cross the border, the lights go off, and you see the zoomies going up to hit all the different positions.
Airplanes?
Yeah.
We could pick up the radios.
Oh, yeah, the fast movers. Yeah. Wow. And then because they didn't send the A-10s until later on after the big – and then the buff came in. Then the B-52 started coming, and it was like,
it was beautiful.
And you started hearing it, boom, 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 boom. And then all the Vietnam guys were like, arc light.
Here we go.
And you just see on the horizon just flash. And that went on for 30 days.
Yeah. I was still sitting in the desert eating MREs, pulling guard duty.
And it got pretty
old. 2 to 6 in the morning.
They're gonna shoot a Scud.
2 in the morning to 6 in the morning.
Yes, because I was a private and I was new, so I sucked.
No, you were a mail clerk, dude.
I was
they were getting even with you.
I was waiting for the Paul the Magic Dragon to come.
Oh yeah, he did. They did too. That was
which one was that? Which plane?
AC-130s. There was this one. After they'd knocked out, they thought they'd knocked out all these different sites. And there was one that was called a Fansong radar, which is one of the big air defense radars that the Russians had given them. And the Russians were actually running it because you could hear them talking in Russian back and forth on the different nets. And there was one right along the border. And it was spinning. You know, it had a top on it that spun. The radar dish was spinning on top of it. And they hit that thing with MLRS. They hit that thing with 8-inch. They hit it with 105-millimeter howitzer, 155-millimeter howitzers. They hit it with fast movers. And the thing kept spinning. That's how they were registering it. Okay, it's still spinning because the Iraqis would turn radars on and off.
Yeah.
Well, they're like, oh, man, this thing, man, we can't kill it. So they called in an AC-130 and it just drilled, it just wiped it clean, but the thing was still spinning. Well, then they send the guys from the CAV up to look at it and they're like, oh, man, everything here is completely destroyed. It looked like Swiss cheese. But the little dish was still turning. It was like a windmill.
But it's not doing anything other than just going around and around.
There's
making us expend organs.
Yeah. There's like 70 pairs of boots where the Iraqis
dropped with a sandwich in it.
Dropped boots and scooted. But that Fansong radar, I remember that every night. Oh, we're gonna hit the Fansong again. We're hitting the Fansong. Just hardcore. They
dug on church key at it. Probably destroyed it.
The cab came up. It's like, oh man, it's completely wrecked.
What did you do?
You wrecked it.
You missed it.
You guys are evil.
The Fansong radar.
Well, I think that leads us right up to Desert Storm to the launch of the ground war. So we're going to go ahead and end it right there. I hope you guys will all come back so we can finish the story. And that'll be our next podcast episode. Will be about the storm.
Yeah, thanks for giving us the time.
Absolutely.
Oh, well, thank
Wonderful
you.
Wonderful to share the you know, thank my you contribution to America's freedom.
The true hero.
Learned
a lot,
Sergeant Rock over there.
Well, and we hope everybody enjoyed this podcast today, Vets on the Net. We hope you'll join us again for our future episodes. If you like what you've heard, please subscribe. I would like to thank our sponsor for this broadcast. It's Eric and Callie McMahon. They are longtime financial supporters of the Flint Hills Veterans Coalition. And we just want to appreciate they're making this broadcast possible for us today. Also, I'd like to thank Dave Lewis of Dave Lewis Entertainment.
Dave Lewis.
Yep. He gave us, I didn't have to buy equipment. So I'm very happy with that.
He's a great American. And
hey, if anybody's got any specific questions, too, send them in and we'll do our best to answer.
Yep. I will, on our website, when we post this on the website, if you go to our website, flinthillsveterans.org, I'll post links to the Plains of Desert Storm and Desert Shield. I'll post links to
Abu Bush.
Different things that we've talked about today, so you'll be able to kind of learn more and you know, let's have a conversation about this.
Why do you, Sagittarius?
Why do you fight for the bush?
Why do you like the bush?
Why do you fight for the bush?
Back that, Betty.
Thanks.
Why, American soldier, why do you fight for the bush?
We fight for the bush.
Thanks for listening. Till next time.